This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin our number three of Sharp Money here on VSIN. Dave Ross and Amal Shaw here at South Point Casino and Hotel. Going to the ninth in Wrigley.
Yeah.
4-3 Cubs under hanging on.
Well, I'll tell you what, they need to get robo umpires in baseball. Wyatt and I were talking during the commercial break. If you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan, St. Louis Cardinals backer or an overbacker, you've absolutely gotten jobbed. It was a 3-0 count. First pitch by Leiter, about 2.5 inches off the plate. Fine. I get it's a 3-0 count. You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
But still, it's off the plate.
It wasn't close.
It's ball four.
It was ball four. The fifth pitch in the at bat on a 3-1 pitch, it missed by 6 inches. I mean,
wow!
I didn't know if the umpire was double parked or what, but I mean, the fact that he called that a strike, Wyatt, and then the next play they get a double play, it was absolutely criminal.
Well, here's the deal, and again, I've talked about it a lot over many different platforms. I did not need the pitch clock. I didn't need the fun bags for bases. But now that those things have been implemented, the game's better. You can't do the get off my lawn type thing any longer. If you're a baseball fan, the games are down by 30 minutes of time. And guess what, Amal? I've been kind of hesitant to want to go to robot umps. If they can do it quickly and keep the pace of the game going, which they can, if they can absolutely do this, the game has been better this year. Rob Manfred, say what you want about him. You got to give him his just due for making these changes that old people might have gone, don't do it. It's the fabric of the game. It's the way it's always been done. He switched it up. And look, I still take exception for the extra inning rules. I think those are still lame.
I agree with you completely.
But everything else, I'm cool with. The bags, if we're getting more running, great. And certainly the time and the pace of the game is so much more enjoyable to watch. If you do this now, to your point, that just affected possibly the total and certainly the side today by bad umpiring. There's no other way around it. So I'm with you. If it's going to improve the quality of the game and for us as gamblers, that experience, so be it.
Well, the game should be 4-4. The Cardinals should have had an at-bat. I think it would have been Nolan Arenado coming to the dish.
Wow.
I'm sorry, excuse me, Paul Goldschmidt.
Well, one of the guys might be going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Goldschmidt coming up with the bases loaded and two outs in a tie game, and they absolutely got jobbed on that one.
So, again, I think it's time, baseball, to really start looking at that if you can do it efficiently. Let's go to America's team. And I look at the Cowboys, and if you're a long-suffering Cowboy backer out there, you go, 1995. I wasn't born yet. I mean, there's a lot of people out there in the space that do not remember when the Cowboys won 3 or 4 Super Bowls in the early 90s, the last one coming almost now, oh my goodness, 30 years ago, Amal. And now you look at this team. This is a 12-win team a year ago. And what I don't understand is, and I see where the juice is, 9.5 for the win total.
Mm-hmm.
It's juice to minus $1.65. By the way, I played it at minus $1.40. Now it's getting out of hand for me. What am I missing?
Well, first of all,
how is this team? Why are people betting the under at plus money at plus $1.40 for the bottom to fall out of the Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, Mike McCarthy era?
So, on the off chance the Cowboys don't win double digits, by the way, Dallas in 21 and 22 had the third best record combined in the National Football League. And I don't understand how they just gloss over this team. So, this way, on the off chance that the Cowboys win 9 games, they can be, we were sharp. No, the reality is Dallas, in my opinion, is third best team in the NFC. They're in a division outside of Philadelphia. I still think the Giants are overhyped and overrated. I think Washington's a team you can get because they just simply don't have the quarterback position filled right now. And you look at the rest of the schedule. They have the Jets, won't be an easy one, but nice on road game at the Arizona Cardinals. You got the Patriots at home, at the Chargers on Monday night in week 6, not an easy game. You're at Buffalo at the Dolphins. Again, tough games there, but at the Panthers, depending on where Carolina is at that point in time. I think this team is very dangerous. They get the Lions at home. They're a very good football team, and they've been right there. I mean, you look at the last couple of postseasons. They've been in there. They've had opportunities, just couldn't seal the deal against the Niners.
I'm totally with you. And again, I do think if you can find alternate markets, maybe to get plus money at 10.5 wins, I'd look to that instead of laying the $1.65. Again, I played it when it was much more manageable when these totals first came out a couple months ago. But barring injury, this is a 10-win team. But here's the amazing thing. They had injury to the key position last year. Super Dak Prescott, as I like to call him. When he's super, they don't lose. And they had Cooper Rush come in, and guess what? They were just fine. It's because of somebody nobody ever talks about. That's Dan Quinn. As long as Dan Quinn is manning that defense for me, and you got 11 and Micah Parsons running around, and you got a front that can get after the quarterback, and I think you have a really good, reliable corner now in Diggs. And I know some people take umbrage and think he's not, maybe he's a little bit overhyped. I don't think so at all. I actually think he was better last year without the interceptions that he had 2 years ago and a much more solid corner. You go out and get Stephon Gilmore in the offseason. I look at this defense, my expectations as a Cowboy backer, somebody's played them 2-1 to win this division. Those numbers are gone too. I think they could have a top five defense in the NFL.
I would agree with you. I mean, Dallas, you know, we talk about their offense all the time because the names are recognizable, but you mentioned Diggs in that secondary. Jordan Luce is solid, and then you bring in Stephon Gilmore as well. Didn't even touch on arguably one of the top three pass rushers in football, Micah Parsons, in terms of what he's able to do. I really like DeMarcus Lawrence on the other side as well. And then you draft Mazi Smith out of Michigan in the first round. I think he's going to be a pretty good player there in between at the nose tackle position. This is a very talented, good football team. 12-5 the last two seasons. Now all of a sudden the expectation is they're going to win 9 games?
Come on. And by the way, I'm so glad that we're sitting here talking about the Cowboy defense for a couple of minutes here in the Sandy Cap of the Cowboys. You mentioned Smith coming out of Michigan. Wyatt, should I be excited? Because I'm looking for somebody that's going to free up those rush lanes for the Tank Lawrences and the Micah Parsons. Is that what they're getting here out of Michigan?
You should always be happy when you draft a Michigan player.
A Michigan man.
Mazi Smith is a freak of nature athlete and will plug up the hole. Another draft pick I did like for you guys, I know going to offense, but Luke Schoonmaker.
Yeah.
He's not going to wow you athletic-wise, but at Michigan he did everything right. He's a good possession tight end. I think he's going to fit in well for that offense.
Yeah, you know, it feels like they had a lot of conversations between Harbaugh and McCarthy leading up to this draft, very Michigan-laden draft, while the Eagles were drafting all the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll find out how that works out. But I'm excited, not because, again, we're going to always talk about Pollard, talk about Dak, talk about the weapons, Zach Martin's holding out. But you know, it's the defense that, to me, that's the point in this team that I go, I can hang my head every week knowing that Dan Quinn's going to get the best out of this unit, and they're going to be a really good unit if it takes time for Dak and the offense to gel. But I don't think it will take time.
No, I don't either. I mean, you look at this offensive line. We haven't even gotten to that. You got a healthy Tyron Smith. Zach Martin there at right guard. Zach Martin's going to Canton.
And we're
going to
get him paid. Well, everybody's worried about he's going to hold out. He's going to be there. I think it's a matter of time, and Jerry's going to go, yeah, you're going to Canton, to your point of all. I'm going to make sure my guy's happy and still wearing a Cowboy uniform in the process.
He's only been an All-Pro 6 straight years. By the way, this is so typical in baseball. Ground ball to second base to Chris Morrell. Game should have been over. Nolan Arenado was just kind of Cadillacing it down the line. Morrell boots it. It goes into the outfield. Next pitch, Wilson Contreras absolutely gets banged on the wrist, unfortunately. So now you've got the tying run at second base with two outs.
And by the way, the worst spot for Contreras to get hit, and former Cub, you know all about that. But in real time here, as we take a look, everything does hang in the balance. The total, the side, everything, absolutely. 4-3 here in the ninth. And it's as routine a play at second base. I played second base. I'm not as young as I used to. I could have made it a play. I mean, get the glove down, kid.
Not only get the glove down, how about just get the body behind it? You still would have been able to make the play. By the way, I don't even know if Contreras will be able to stay in the game in this one. But you know, getting back to Dallas here real quick, Dave, to me, I just don't understand why this team is sitting at 9.5 wins. First of all, 9.5 to the over at minus 165 at DraftKings. The number should be 10.5, in my opinion.
Totally agree. That's why I think the alt market there that you can play at a 10.5 at plus money for the Cowboys is a good play. Because, again, you can't predict injuries. We understand that. If their core stays healthy, and Dak now a full year removed, and Michael Gallup a full year removed from that ACL, and the offensive line has gotten better, and I think now you look at Smith a year ago, and you go, boy, the Joneses really nailed that draft as well 2 years ago. If they nailed the Michigan draft, if you will, this year, Cowboys are going to be right there. Hey, I'm not going to shy away from this team possibly coming out of the NFC. And I know it's been since 95 since we've seen that. But in the conference, I just look at it and I go, who really scares you behind? We understand why San Francisco and Philadelphia are the 1 and 2s. But Dallas is the 3. And tell me, who, if it's not Dallas, who would be the third best team in the NFC?
So I want to get your take on this. Mentioned this the other day. For me, right now in the NFC, Philly and San Francisco give a slight edge to Philadelphia because the quarterback position. But for me, it's not that much.
Yep.
and then Dallas, a little bit of separation between Philly and San Francisco and Dallas, and then a precipitous drop-off from everybody else behind them. And I know everybody loves Seattle. Okay, let's just break down. Receiving core, you got to go slightly to Dallas. Brandon Cooks gets 1,000 yards every year. I don't know what this guy does. I don't know if he gets into fights with his teammates, if he sleeps with his teammates.
Well-traveled.
How is this guy traded every year?
He's the NFL version of Kenny Lofton. Well, great player, but gets traded every – he's like the guy you could trade all the time.
Kenny Lofton had a nice stay in Dallas.
He stayed in Cleveland with the former Indians for a while. But then he became well-traveled at the end, right? But, look, I'm with you guys on Brandon Cooks. Like, initially I went, well, is this a guy you really want on the team? Then I hear the way the guys have reacted and the difference he can make in the slot for the Gallups of the world and CeeDee Lambs, then it makes a lot of sense. I think they're going to be okay, even though Dalton Schultz has gone at tight end position, mentioned the rookie out of Michigan. And I think they have other guys that they've drafted well in that position, typically, that they didn't want to spend the money on Schultz. That's why they let him go. So I'm really okay. Yes, Tony Pollard, gruesome injury against San Francisco. Do they bring back Zeke at a very low rate to possibly help out?
That'd be great for them.
That could absolutely be there. So I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses in this team. I think this is easily a double-digit win team, and I do think they're in play right now to possibly be one of those sneaky teams at double digits to win the NFC.
I get people have an affinity for Detroit. Minnesota, had a great year last year, but still, the Vikings take a step back. You look at Detroit, maybe we'll see, but they're not better than Dallas.
Totally agree. When we come back, let's look at the rest of the NFC East and see what the competition is besides Fly Eagles Fly in the City of Brotherly Shove. Come on back. It is Sharp Money here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You're going to get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort those picks out by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the current hot hand. So for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can do all that for just $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Cubs win, fly the W in Chicago. They hold on for that 4-3 win despite them all making you sweat out that, like, some of the worst defense you've seen in the ninth inning, and then you get a hit by pitch and all of a sudden you get two on, but the Cubs do hold on for the 4-3 win.
And some of the worst umpiring I've seen in a long time.
When you make a case to bring in robot umps, you know it's pretty bad.
Well, look,
when you're trending on Twitter, it's bad.
Oh, it's trending now?
He's the number 2 trending topic right now.
I mean, it was egregious,
bad.
Yeah.
So again, look, I think if they can do it, Rob Manfred, you've made some innovations to the game. I think people balked at it at first, to use a baseball term. And I think now, if these changes have been effective, which they have been, I don't think there's any other way to say it, the time would be now for Rob Manfred to say this type of stuff, which now we're all in bed with gambling, it clearly affected the side and the total today in that 4-3 win. I think you have to, for the up and up, if robot umps can solve what you guys just witnessed, I think they need to take a strong look at it in the offseason.
See, I enjoy the pitch clock and all these new rules. I'm with you. I hate the extra inning rule. I wish they'd get rid of it.
That's terrible.
I still enjoy the human aspect of the umpires, but I would like, I can't remember who's doing it, but I would like a challenge on a pitch call right there.
On a strike three.
Yeah, or any strike, strike that's called a ball or ball that's called a strike. I like that.
Well, the only reason why I'll push back a little bit on that, Wyatt, I'm with you on the human element. I love the human element in any game, right? But the problem, I think, with some of the replay stuff that we see in the NFL is things that are not challengeable. So you have these egregious plays, but then it's not challengeable, and then the egregious play is allowed to happen. If the pitch strike, if we can really get an automated pitch zone, right, and it's quick, it's electronic, and it does take the guesswork out of the home plate umpire, if they can do it for every pitch, I think they should do it. If it's going to be arbitrary, we're going to have problems because sometimes on a 2-0 pitch, it can affect an at-bat as much as a 2-2 pitch, right? Because sometimes, to Amal's point, if you don't know what we're referencing, a 3-0 count, They kind of gave him the neighborhood call on a 3-0 count, which it was outside of the neighborhood. It should have been ball four. So they give him that. Then the 3-1 pitch, and under our when can you challenge, when can you not, you might not be able to challenge the 3-1 pitch if it's only on strike threes. That was more egregious than the 3-0 pitch. That's the problem with having arbitrary when I can challenge, when I can't.
Dave, first of all, that ball wasn't in the neighborhood. It was barely in the area code. Okay.
It was not in Wrigleyville.
No, it definitely wasn't. You had a better chance, a guaranteed rate of getting the call being a strike. But it's just unfortunate because the reality is, and this is the problem, this changed the entire dynamic for the Cardinals.
There it is.
Right? They won the game yesterday. They could have won this game today. Now, all of a sudden, this team is looking at taking two games from the Cubs, making a move in this division potentially. Who knows? I mean, we sit there and say, oh, it's one game, one pitch, one inning. Well, over the course of a season, it matters.
It does, and this is a team, the Cardinals, that feel like they're buried, and they were trying to kind of get out from underwater here in July. We'd already heard the GM say, we're going to be sellers. You lose a tough one like this, you flip this result, and all of a sudden, you get inside of 10 games in the division. Reds have come back to the pack a little bit, find out if the Brewers have staying power. It does change a game like this, not just one, but that happens over and over. All of a sudden, it changes their outlook of what their GM wants to do and going forward before we get to the August 1st deadline. So we're not saying that's all to blame for bad umpiring, but when it is trending on Twitter, it was pretty egregious today. It was obvious to see the right calls were not made, and it might have changed not just today's game, but their outlook for the next week.
No question about it, and I think the one thing that it makes it tough when you're betting on these games and you see some of these calls that go this way.
Totally. And by the way, let's stay on Major League Baseball here, and we will get back to the NFC East in the next segment, because I do want to go through that exercise a little bit now with this loss by the Cardinals to the Cubs. And again, their GM is already on record saying, we're going to be sellers. Now, what does that selling look like? Is that a Paul Goldschmidt? Is that a Nolan Arenado? They are now 10 games under 500 at 44-54, the Cardinals, with this 4-3 loss that just came here in Chicago. They're 10.5 back of the Brewers in this division. And right now the Cubs, with that win, 5 games under, 8 games back in the division. Do you believe them that the Cardinals don't get involved in the futures market, people? Are they truly going to signal that white flag and surrender for the year?
I think so. I think if you're St. Louis, realistically, you look at who's heading to free agency, what's your situation, and you make a decision based on that. To me, at this point in time, it's just hard to believe they're going to be able to make a push just based on where they're in the standings.
And the Cubs, conversely here, 5 games under with this 4-3 win today, and now they look at it as 8 games back in the division. Again, before you get in the futures market in Major League Baseball, you have to identify, we're identifying St. Louis now as a clear seller before the deadline. And you wonder about the Cubs because they've got a piece in Marcus Stroman, the sausage king of Chicago. So if Stroman's on the block, Abe, there's no way I can back the Cubs if they might get rid of one of their front-end starters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the Cubs are just going to play out the slate. You know, they'll be making some moves in the sense they get rid of a guy like Stroman. I think Cody Bellinger could be on the move. Remember, he's on a 1-year, $20 million deal with the Cubs this year. So from that standpoint, I think Chicago would look to move on from him as well if the right opportunity presents itself.
We mentioned Baltimore and Tampa Bay, a big one in the AL East today. You mentioned another team I want to bring up in the NL West, and that's the Padres, as they're in Motor City Kitty territory to take on the Tigers today. And they're $1.50 a favorite, by the way, with former Met great Seth Lugo on the bump. You say the Padres have to be sellers at this point. This is almost being realistic, right? Saying, okay, we've got Yu Darvish, we've got Blake Snell, we've got Musgrove, we've got pitching. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get rid of, I don't believe, the Manny Machados or the Fernando Tatis Juniors of the world. But when you say sellers, do you believe that's where the market comes from? It's the pitching market if San Diego does wave the white flag?
Yeah, Blake Snell's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. You could potentially move on from Josh Hader as well. I think people would love to get a guy like Hader.
Yep.
Juan Soto is under one more year of team control, so that'll be a key in determining where they go with him or what they do with him.
Now, you mentioned Juan Soto with 1 year of team control, because what's the conversation across Major League Baseball right now? Shohei Ohtani. And if people in the know will tell you that the Angels, the screw-up is, forget about whether or not they deal him in the next week before the trade deadline. They should have traded him last year. They could have gotten more leverage with 1 year on the contract, a la a Juan Soto. Juan Soto right now, and I think it's a great point you just made, he's in the situation that the Angels screwed up a year ago.
Yeah.
So while people might look at Shohei Ohtani and go, oh, you got to deal him now, really the optimum window to move him was when there was still a year left of team control for whomever that team might be. That's why a Juan Soto deal is more plausible, because the incoming team at least gets him for one more year under the current deal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think Lugo has not performed particularly well. Now, I know he's played, but Soto has not performed particularly well in San Diego, but he's done better the last month and a half. I think I would look to move on from him. You've got a bunch of long-term guys, Tatis, Bogarts, Machado, Jake Cronenworth. So you've got a good nucleus there. You could probably get a decent haul back for a player like Juan Soto at this stage, especially with 1 year left under his contract. So does San Diego look to retain him this year and try and make a push next year? Not the worst decision, because you still have him on a fairly inexpensive price compared to what you'd pay in the open market. Blake Snell has been as good as anybody.
Yeah.
I think you can get a good return for him as well.
And so if the Padres, again, before you start looking at those wild card odds, keep that in mind to what I'm all saying. Again, minus $1.44 today. If you want to play him on the run line, you can get plus money, plus $1.10. But you might see more Seth Lugos in that rotation. They start trading off in a way the Blake Snells of the world. Very quickly, I want to get to one game on the Major League Baseball docket that I know you like today. It might be the fighting fish down there in Miami. Yeah. Braxton Garrett on the bump against the Rocks. Do you think the Marlins are a good play today?
Well, I do, but I've been colder than liquid nitrogen, so you better think about this before you decide to follow here. Fade if you want. I mean, either way. But Marlins right now, run line, they're coming on in off a six-game losing streak. Mm. They did have a day off yesterday. I think it's a good spot for them to bounce back. A Colorado team that generally struggles a lot on the road. Just to kind of back up that stat, 14-33 so far on the road this year.
Okay, so Amal's going to look to the Marlins maybe on that run line there. Minus $1.20, see if the Fightin' Fish can put up a fight today. Very quickly, you know, I have to pick your brain before we get back to football in the next segment. My Metropolitans, they're fighting. They keep saying they're not going to move guys, but you kind of feel like this could be the last stand this weekend in Boston before the trade deadline. Senga's on the bump today. He's been great as a rookie. Do you like the Mets small price today on the road? Minus $1.02.
I'm going to say yes, because I know you do.
Thank you.
So that's why I'm going to say yes.
I'm trying to talk myself into it.
No, but I'm going to tell you, I don't understand this price. Crawford's on the bump here, obviously. Cutter Crawford for the Boston Red Sox in this matchup. To me, you know what? He was outstanding his last start against Chicago. Gave up one hit in six innings. Did have four base on balls. Short price for the Red Sox at home at Fenway tonight.
All right, so the baby Mets are getting ready to get called up. We'll see if they have a little bit of fight left in them. When we come back, NFC East talk, break down that division next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today. New customers can bet just $5. Get $150 in bonus money instantly by using the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N, when you sign up today. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for all the terms and conditions. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here. You know, sometimes I look up on the screens during the show and you see, like, these games from last year. Football season's right around the corner where the Bills had a huge lead on the Vikings. And I remember, oh, yeah, I had Bills money line that day. How'd that turn out? Not good. But I wonder how the NFC East is going to turn out, because Amal, you know that I like to bring this point up.
Yep.
There has been no repeat champion in the NFC East in not one, but two decades. So this time last year, you and I were doing shows together. Cowboys were coming off winning the division the year before, and the Eagles were 3-1 in the marketplace. And we said, boy, that feels like a good number.
Yeah.
Now, that number quickly went away, came down to about plus $1.75 after the great draft in the offseason. They get A.J. Brown, and then the Eagles go on to win the division. I'm not saying exclude the Eagles from winning the East because of history, but it is bizarre that we've gone 20 years without a repeat champion. Now, to those people that really look at history, they'll tell you the Eagles were the last team to do it.
Right.
But so they could do it again this year. The odds on favorite to win the division at minus $1.35. Cowboys plus $1.90. G-Man plus $8.50. And then those Commanders with a new owner, a new ownership group, including Magic Johnson, 16-1 in D.C. Do you play? I know we don't as a betting network. Yeah. You should be aware of the past. It is a trend. I don't know that it really has much to do about what will happen this year. It's more of an irony, I think, or a happenstance, if you will. I understand why the Eagles are favored. I really do. But I ask you this. Is it just a two-horse race, or could the Giants and or Commanders really be in this equation?
I don't think they can. I think Dallas and Philadelphia are so far ahead of Washington and the Giants right now. And just look from a season win total standpoint. Eagles 11.5. Cowboys are right now 9.5 at DraftKings, depending on where you look. Giants 7.5 and Commanders 6.5. I think the Commanders are right where they should be at about 6.5. Questions at quarterback, whether Sam Howell is going to be the guy. If it's not him, Jacoby Brissett's a backup. They brought in Jake Fromm as a potential third stringer. We'll see if he stays on the roster there. You look at this Giants team, they re-signed Daniel Jones to a big contract. But, Dave, I'm not a believer in Daniel Jones. I feel like a lot of this came from the fact that he ran the ball effectively in Minnesota in that playoff game. Other than that, he's been an inconsistent performer for me. I don't think a lot of people are enamored with him. They need Saquon Barkley in the mix. Depending on how long Saquon Barkley potentially sits out, could be a huge factor in terms of where the Giants go.
Selfishly, just sit out week one against the Cowboys. Like Saquon Barkley... If you watch the playoff win against Minnesota last year, he was the off. And I know Danny Downs is doing it with his legs, but it really was 26. Yep. And the fact that they're at an impasse right now, by the way, we don't know. It doesn't look like they're close. That's what the rumors are. The reports before we get to Monday, we have to sign those tags. There's a good chance Saquon Barkley sits out. And if that's the case, there's no way I could back the Giants either as a long shot at 850 to win the division or 7.5 win total.
Yeah.
Dable did a great job last year, and as I think you pointed out earlier in the program, he should have won Coach of the Year.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But now, for an encore, if you don't have 26 for a while in that backfield, Amal, how do they piecemeal it together? I know Darren Waller is a nice addition at tight end. He doesn't block, by the way. He is a pass-receiving tight end, and that's about it. So for a team that likes to be balanced and run the football, he doesn't really help you in that equation either.
No, not at all. And I'll tell you another thing, to your point, I think Saquon Barkley being on the line out of the lineup has a direct impact on Daniel Jones. I think you'll see his ability to run is not as great. I think some of the passing, the running lanes will disappear. And I'm just not sold on him as a passer. The Giants appear to be, you know, look, I was completely wrong on Jalen Hurts. Maybe I'll be right on Daniel Jones because I've just not seen it with this team. 7.5 is their season win total. This is a team that won, I think, 9 or 10 games last year. So they're looking at taking a step back big time this year.
Yeah, that's what certainly the odds market is indicating there, that they will take a step back. Let's look at the Eagles. 11.5, I get it. You know, you and I talked about this a year ago. We were both sold on the 52.
Yeah.
We didn't know about number one, the one, Jalen Hurts. Now I think we know. Now, I will say this, just you should take into account. He got dinged up at the end of last season, and he had a dinged wing. He was unbelievable in the Super Bowl with the exception of the fumble that was returned for a touchdown. It was a big part of the game. But Jalen Hurts was dynamic. I don't want him to be injured. I hope he's okay. But the way they used him, Amal, last year, I almost look at it like if you remember Cam Newton after the MVP season and then the body really couldn't take the pounding. I'm starting to worry that the way they utilize Jalen Hurts in the run game is going to lead to too many shots. And now you don't have the mustache back there anymore to back him up. If he does go out, he's now in Indianapolis. Do you worry about Hurts coming back a little bit and receding from the great year he had last year?
Well, look, realistically, it'd be difficult to duplicate what he did, but I think he is on that level and he's legitimate and there to stay. I don't think it was a one-hit wonder for him. You look at the perimeter with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith.
Man,
this team
weapons.
Is really, really good. They do lose Miles Sanders, but I don't think it's as much of a concern as it might be for some other people. You mentioned both coordinators leaving there. That's a concern as well, but excuse me. To me, what I find interesting is that Nick Sirianni doesn't get any credit for anything.
Zero.
Like, we're acting like Shane Steichen is, like, you know, the second.
And Gannon. Gannon and Steichen were the keys to everything.
Yeah, I mean, to me, let's see what Nick Sirianni does here. This is a great opportunity for him to prove himself. I still like this Eagles team. I think they're uber talented. They did lose Hargrave, the defensive tackle who goes to San Francisco. And I'm telling you, Dave, with that, they did take Jalen Carter, which helps a lot. But I think that makes San Francisco better. And what the 49ers did by doing that is not only do you add a great piece to go with Nick Bosa and Eric Armstead, But now you take away a critical piece from the Philadelphia Eagles' run game.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, it just felt like they were just drafting Georgia Bulldogs the last 2 years there to fortify that defense. So it's kind of like, you know, Georgia and Philly, we'll see how that works out. I do very quickly, when I look at them big picture, and you mentioned the wideouts and their dynamic, they got a dynamic tight end as well. Miles Sanders had a terrible Super Bowl. Maybe that's one of the reasons they let him go to Carolina. Can they just get it done by committee? Is the offense that good? Their running game has been really good, right? And it feels like you can just kind of put in, give me a running back from Friday Night Lights, right? Boobie Miles. They just insert anybody and it seems to work. Or do they need to rely on Jalen Hurts to throw it a little bit more this year?
I don't like their core running backs right now. DeAndre Swift, Kenneth Gainwell, and then Rashad Penny. If you look at all three guys, Swift, Gainwell's solid. Let me amend my statement on Kenneth Gainwell. But to me, DeAndre Swift wasn't great in Detroit.
No.
He was decent. And Rashad Penny, for where he was drafted in the first round out of San Diego State, was a bit of a failure there with this.
A lot of injury concerns.
Yeah, he's been inconsistent in terms of staying on the field. So Boston Scott as well, and they have Trey Sermon on their roster also. I'm just not a believer in this Philadelphia running game right now.
Yeah, and I kind of look at it the same way, and I go, you know, if Detroit couldn't wait to move on from DeAndre Swift and then draft Jahmyr Gibbs in the first round, that should tell you something there. They're willing to part ways with Swift. Let's see if they can get the best out of him in Philadelphia. Very quickly, let's go to D.C., because we mentioned it off the top of the show, big news, obviously, Dan Snyder, you know, the witch is dead, if you will, in Washington, D.C. They're very excited that he is no longer the owner. Ron Rivera, though, now you got a new ownership group. We've seen this historically happen. I was there in D.C. when Jack Kent Cook, the last owner, actually physically passed away, and then you get a new owner that turned out to be Dan Snyder, and he couldn't wait to run out the old regime. Now that you have a new regime, is this the last chance for Ron Rivera, Jack Del Rio and company to say, hey, we got things going in the right direction? That might be true defensively. But offensively, Amal, that's really where I have the questions for this team.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I like their receiving core. Even though Pro Football Focus ranks them 13th as a collective, I still think they're pretty dangerous in terms of what they can do. Terry McLaurin, absolute stud for this team. But Dave, again, the problem is when you look at it, you got Dotson, McLaurin, and Curtis Samuel. Who gets them the football? Sam Howell is the projected starter for this team. Jacoby Brissett, as I mentioned earlier, a backup. And then, of course, Jake Fromm on the roster as well. I think this team is just a quarterback away from being extremely competitive defensively. You look at their front line, Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen, Chase Young, all former first-round picks. You got Kendall Fuller back in that secondary. They draft Emmanuel Forbes out of Mississippi State. This guy is just an absolute machine in terms of returning interceptions to the house. Let's see if he can do that at the NFL level. I think this is a pretty talented team, minus quarterback. And unlike San Francisco, who's just absolutely loaded, they've got six or seven players who are one or two in their positions. I think this team's going to have a hard time overcoming the lack of quarterback play.
Are you surprised they didn't address that in free agency? Obviously, they let Heinicke go down there to the ATL, and they just say, I want to go with the guy we drafted last year in Sam Howell.
Yeah, look, here's the thing with Taylor Heinicke. You're going to only get to a certain place.
Yeah.
And I think you're better off taking a shot with Sam Howell and seeing what you have. If it doesn't work out, you may put yourself in a position to get the first overall pick. Then you start to look at whether you take Caleb Williams from Washington. By the way, what a great pick it would be for them. Remember, he played at Gonzaga.
I think
it was at Gonzaga in D.C. And then, or you look at Drake May from North Carolina.
So you think this is a play maybe, let's see what this year looks like. If it flatlines, we got two guys we have our eyes
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
Fascinating market there in the NFC East. When we come back, let's put a finishing bow on this edition of Sharp Money here on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is out now, and our college football guide is coming up in just a few weeks. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSIN has to offer to help up your betting game. This offer ends July 31st, so don't miss out on this preseason deal right now. Visit VSIN.com/subscribe to become a VSIN Pro subscriber today. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here, wrapping up this edition of Sharp Money here on VSiN. I said in the break I wanted to ask you a philosophical question. We've talked a lot about the NFC East today. My team, your team, America's team. I played the Cowboys 9.5 over at minus $1.40. That has gotten, dare I say, out of hand, up to $1.75. The alt win total for the Dallas Cowboys at 10.5, you can get plus money at plus $1.10 or $1.15 if you shop around. Yeah. Once people now look at that and go, well, 10.5 now, I can get plus money. Or 9.5, I got to lay the big juice at $1.75. Is there a philosophical way to attack that if you go, I think this is an 11-win team, but I don't want to bet the minus $1.75 price in case they have injuries and things go south?
Well, here's the thing. The more plus money prices you get, the more advantageous it is, because even if you take a loss, you're obviously reducing or mitigating your losses. And in terms of the laying the juice, that's why in baseball I'm a big proponent of the run line. Mm-hmm. Because even though you might lose some games, you know, 4-3, but perfect example yesterday at Tampa, right? They didn't win the game.
Right.
So instead of laying 180, I took the run line plus 126, still lost the game anyway. So I think sometimes the risk is worth the reward. When you look at the Dallas situation, I think the risk is worth the reward. You mentioned the plus money price. I don't know if you have the plus on the 10.5, what the number is.
Plus $1.10.
Okay, so as opposed to the minus 165. Now, in that particular instance, I don't know if it's necessarily worth it if you're concerned about this team, but I would take it because I think this Dallas team is an 11-win team. Also, when you get down the stretch, you could potentially hedge off. If you felt like they may not get there, you could take the other team that they're playing. I think they could close out with the Commanders at the end of the year.
Yep.
So there's always that opportunity. The one thing I will tell you, if you're pretty vigilant about this, you can sit there, go through the entire season, almost any game. Perfect example, the Cubs game today. The total was 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in time, you could have gotten a 9.5 on the in play. You could have gotten an over 7.5. So there's always going to generally
that
be
middle.
A better. Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a better number that comes along. And this game today, perfect example. You might not have been able to middle because I think the final was 4-3,
yep.
Right? But still, what I'm saying is the position you're in on a play, you might end up eating juice, which is fine, especially if you're at minus 110. You can get yourself off of a lot of plays. 90% of your plays, it's going to be very rare. In the WNBA last night, Phoenix Mercury beat the Chicago Sky. It was a wire-to-wire job. Okay, they were getting a 1.5 at home. They end up winning the game, by 18. They never led by less than 4 points after the first minute of the game. So in that game, if you had Chicago, you're not going to be able to get off the game. But what I'm saying is, you're generally going to have an opportunity at some point in time, whether it's through the course of the season, through the course of a game, to be able to kind of evacuate, pull the ripcord on your bet if you don't like your position.
I think it's very smart. It's a great way to attack it. You do not have to be kind of married to these bad bets if you see them and forecast them the way they're going. Watch for the changing markets right there, and that's a good way to get off some of the bad bets and or look for a middle if you're on the right side at the beginning of the year. See what those alt totals adjust to. In this case, we're talking about the Cowboys at 9.5 or 10.5, and then maybe you can find a nice middle scenario as well. So really astute way to break down that market. Week one, and again, we talked a little bit about it with the Giants and Saquon Barkley. Again, the news is they don't appear to be close to a contract, to agreeing to the tag. There's a chance that Saquon Barkley doesn't sign it on Monday and holds out. The line has not moved. This is the Sunday night game to begin week one. The Cowboys are going to New York, New Jersey, what exit? And they're going to lay 3 points on the road. I'm not in the business of laying road favorites week one. Agreed. I don't like that. Does that, depending on what Saquon Barkley decides, does this number move based on the news that we're going to get on Monday?
I don't think it comes down if he plays. However, I think if he doesn't play, the number goes up, and I think you could see this thing get to 4.
Wow.
And to me, I think if you like Dallas, you take a shot with them right now. Dave, I have a feeling he's not going to be there because the Giants are not going to want to sign him to a long-term contract. They don't need to. Because remember, he's franchise tag, so he'd make just under $10.1 million this year, $10,090,000. So he's got a great situation, obviously, financially. But for him, he's already made $38 million in his career. He could sit there and choose to sit out here, unlike Pollard, who's made less than $4 million. Absolutely. And Josh Jacobs is going to be interesting. He will pay attention to what happens with Saquon. And one other argument that Saquon has in his favor, he has less career carries than Josh Jacobs.
Wow. See, that is fascinating because I think what you're getting at here is this is all going to happen here in the next 72 hours.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're going to see how these line moves potentially are associated with it. By the way, Las Vegas is going to open up the season in Denver. Okay? Right now, they're four-point dogs on the road. Josh Jacobs doesn't, let's just say hypothetically, he doesn't play. This number go up too, like we're talking about with Saquon? Because I'm with you. If he does play, I don't know that it comes down a whole lot, right, if at all. But if he doesn't play, that's where we could see the line shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that you pay attention to. And it's rare that you get this situation where a player of the caliber of Saquon Barkley may miss the first week of the season due to a holdout, not due to injury.
Yeah, and that could be the same case here. Josh Jacobs, a great year a year ago. Still four feels a little heavy. I know everybody's on Denver this year. Year one of Sean Payton. You know, it's funny that you said, like, some of these times, some of your bets, if you've, you know, somebody goes wire to wire, you kind of tip your cap. I want to get back to the Open Championship very quickly here because we talked about it with Wes Reynolds earlier in the program as well. If Brian Harman runs away with this thing right now, he's got a 5-shot lead over the rest of the field,
yeah,
and it's Tommy Fleetwood, the Englishman, as this is being played in England. So he is the sentimental favorite to try to get back in there. Brian Harman right now, plus $1.50 to close out this British Open. You know me. I'm going to look at some longer shots that I, because again, I think the course is going to look completely different this weekend when you wake up here stateside and see, I'm not saying a monsoon, but you're going to get rain and you're going to get wind. And the course has already been tough. Brian Harman's a lefty. He's an American, really good links golf player. But now it's really going to be different from what he saw today. Amal, I actually believe players that are even par right now, that would put you 10 off the lead, but only 5 back of second. I'm going to start scouring some of these numbers for marquee players. Maybe the plus threes and the plus two could be a little bit longer. I know that's where Scottie Scheffler is at plus three, making the cut on the number. He's now 90-1 to win this thing. But my point is, I don't think this thing is over by a long shot. And if Brian Harman does run away in the betting market, I have to tip my cap to him. It's unplayable for me at plus $1.50, but I have to look down the board a little bit knowing the changing weather's coming. And my handicap's going to be, this thing's going to tighten up before we get to the winner's circle on Sunday.
You mentioned Harman, Fleetwood, Straka right now sitting at minus -4, Day at minus -3, Sharma at minus -3, and of course Lee at minus -3. Dave, how far down the board did you say you're willing to go?
I'm willing to look at marquee players that are still at even par, which I know sounds ridiculous at 10 off the lead. But again, I'm really looking at Tommy Fleetwood at 5 in second, as that's kind of where I'm looking to get to in the next 18 holes. And let's see what Brian Harman does in bad weather tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, if Harman doesn't shoot even or better, and he comes back to the pack a little bit, if those even par guys can go shoot a 3-4 under round, they're going to find themselves 3 or 4 off the lead come Sunday.
Well, real quick to update everybody. Harman, right now you mentioned plus +150, Fleetwood plus +450, Rory McIlroy 10-1, Jason Day 16-1, and Spieth 16-1. Minwoo Lee 18-1. So, and Straka at 18-1. To me, you mentioned it. Rory McIlroy right now at minus -1.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Spieth at minus -2. I mean, these guys are within striking distance, but I feel like it's going to be Harman or Fleetwood.
Wow. And again, that's where you almost look at it and go, is it a two-horse race with Harman and Fleetwood? If there's somebody in the other pack that you just mentioned, Amal, mm-hmm, that I might take a strong look at, it's the low Aussie, Minwoo Lee. Yeah. And he's at 300 par, so he's 7 off the lead, but 2 back of Fleetwood. And the reason why I'm going to look to, there's a song by Red Hot Chili Peppers, Scar Tissue. I'm looking at guys that have scar tissue. I'm looking at Jordan Spieth. I'm looking at Jason Day. And sometimes I go, man, they might have too much scar tissue for my liking to actually get back in there and close. Minwoo Lee doesn't have that. This is kind of like, hey, man, I'm here. I got the game to go low. I'm already just 7 back right now, but again, 2 out of second place. I think Minwoo Lee, because sometimes you're young enough to not know what you don't know.
Sure.
And I think he might be one of those guys. The other guys know. They've won majors, and they know what it's like to lose majors too. And so there's a little bit concern for me for a guy like Jordan Spieth and Jason Day to get back in there mentally and say, I'm back in this fight for the long haul.
No, no question about it. You mentioned Spieth, former winner in 2017 at the Open. He's sitting at minus -2. So if you think he can make a push, it gets a pretty good odds on him.
And the last win that he's had in a major came here, as you mentioned, in 2017. Amal, a lot of fun being
always
back with you, brother. Appreciate a great job by Wyatt behind the glass as well. Thank you, sir. Thanks for watching. And right here, Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.